how are you daily? Daily. Yeah, we're going to slip and slide, but how are you daily summoning magically a better version of yourself? Go demonstrate that in the world. Don't talk about it. Don't just teach it. Don't just orate it and broadcast it. Go be it.
Welcome to the Cosmic Keys Podcast. This is going to be your episode for the week of May 20th, 2019 to May 26th, 2019. On today's show, we had the pleasure of interviewing Mary DeCina. Mary is a clairvoyant, psychic, and working astrologer who's been in the metaphysical world for over 30 years professionally. We discovered Mary through Joe Roop's show, Lighting the Void, as she does once a month new moon astrology forecasts and on-the-air readings for Joe on his show. So we had a really fun conversation with her, covering a lot of ground, heard a lot of her stories and wisdom. So stay tuned for that. But before we get into that, it's time to do our forecasting section with Dan All Alone. So if any of you follow Scarlett on social media, at Arcane Alchemy is her name. She is on a really cool vacation right now, traveling Europe. I believe it is a cruise type vacation where she's going to countries in Scandinavia, in Russia, close to the Baltic Sea, I believe. So she's having a great time right now. And I am here in my studio. It's a little bit of a different vibe when I'm doing this by myself, but I'm feeling cozy. I caught a glimpse of myself in the mirror, and I'm wearing a black shirt, and I have my glasses on and my podcasting headphones on, and I'm all alone here in my studio. It's late at night, and I'm really having an Art Bell moment right now. But besides that, so for our forecast, last week we drew the Lover's card as our card of the week. And when I try to think how that card, that major arcana early card of great significance, manifested in my life, it didn't manifest in the fun way with a new lover, unfortunately. But the Lovers is all about choices too. It comes right after the Hierophant, which we got 2 weeks ago. So we went in order last week, Hierophant to the Lovers. And as the Hierophant is Taurus, the Lovers are Gemini. So I was thinking more about the Gemini signification of that card for myself this week. I've got to say I had a pretty good week. I did some career shifting where I changed offices and got this kind of fresh new start. I got another pretty exciting opportunity presented to me that I would love to share with you all, but because it's verbally confirmed and not officially confirmed, I don't really want to jinx myself. But if all goes to plan, I will have a pretty fun artistic month in the month of June in Gemini season. And other than that, yeah, it's been a good week, and I think the decision-making style of that card was on my mind because these new things were presenting themselves to me, and I had sort of a pre-planned routine scheduled for this week, trying to finish a different project, and as your situation changes, you have to make adjustments, and you have to make choices. Well, am I going to go according to my original plan, or am I going to pivot and do something different? So it was very Gemini-like in that sense. I kind of wish it was more literal, though, with maybe a new lover in my life. That would be fun. But yeah, I mean, as I think about, you know, the time of the year we're in right now, this last week was kind of the last Taurus week we get, because next week the sun is going to be moving into Gemini. And it makes me sort of reflective on what I love about Taurus season. I mean, this isn't an official statement, but I had the thought this week that Taurus and Aquarius, the two fixed signs of winter and spring, might be my two favorite seasonal times of the year. And it's interesting too, because I, in my chart, I'm very Scorpio heavy and very Leo heavy. So it's interesting that this time of the year, Taurus season and Aquarius season are kind of my favorite. But why do I love Taurus season, and why has it treated me so well this year? Well, it's kind of like, you know, Aries season, you can get snow, you get a lot of rain, and it's very muddy. You know, it's like the snow melts, but there's no greenery on top. And it, I just call it mud season in a way. But in Aries season, you still do get that initial spark after the spring equinox, where, you know, you are on that momentum-driven movement forward into the new season. Taurus, on the other hand, it's dead smack in the middle of the spring, and it's so sensual. It's like, I love taking naps, but this Taurus season, man, you know that feeling you get when you wake up from a nap and your body is just like, kind of just feels really nice, and then you like stretch your arms and you're like, oh, that was super indulgent. I probably screwed up my sleep schedule, but you know what? That was worth it. I had a lot of those days this Taurus season. So I feel like it's a good time of the year to treat your body well. It's a good time of the year to indulge in sensual pleasures, and it's just chill. It's heavy, it's solid, it's fixed earth. And just when you look around, I mean, in the beginning of Taurus season, that mud season of Aries is behind us, and then you get the nice greenery. And then by the end of Taurus season, like right now, I mean, the trees in my yard that were just nice leafy green at the beginning of Taurus season are now like flowering, you know? So I feel like Taurus is very green, leafy, lush, hardy leaves, grass, green. And then Gemini, it's kind of like the flowers are blooming and the bees are buzzing and you're buzzing around. So it's interesting. Yeah, I was getting the preview of Gemini season while relishing in this Taurus season. And here in my studio, it's kind of a cool little setup I've got in a carriage house, you know, a nice little space where I can record music, I can paint, I can hang out, and I'm away from the city, away from the noise. But here at the studio, there's actually a pretty big garden in the yard that has, it's not kept by the tenants that live in the main house, so every year it kind of gets overgrown with wild plants. And it's interesting, last year, because if we get into the subject of magical plants or occult plants or just herbalism in general, I really wanted to cultivate mugwort last year. So I bought mugwort seeds. I had my grow lights and I made a mugwort plant sprout. And I was real excited. I brought the mugwort sprout here to my studio, planted it in this section, and was like, oh, nobody step on it. Like, it's this little baby, the mugwort. And then, you know, when I start realizing what this plant looks like afterwards, I realized the whole garden was already totally overrun with wild mugwort. So I feel like this space is just a natural witchy space. It's kind of my hermit's den. I feel very hermit card here. And I'm really glad that it happens to be magical enough to have wild mugwort growing everywhere. And for those of you that don't know, mugwort, astrologically, it's planetary correspondences with the moon. It's a very feminine, dreamy, astral projection inducing herb that if you make tea before bed, you can lucid dream, you can go astral projecting, you can have OBEs, all that fun stuff that us magic folk love. And I have it dried just in like a little sack that sometimes if I'd, you know, if the moon is doing something cool and I'm like, I want to do some cool astral travel, lucid dreaming tonight, you just take your mugwort sack like I have. It's in like a sunglasses pouch. Put it under your pillow and you can actually smell it. It's got this spicy smell. And it, the way it works is it wakes you up. The compounds within it like make you not really want to sleep. So it wakes you up while you're down and then you remember your dreams, or maybe you like get disturbed and then like sort of snap out of it in the dream world and have a lucid dream. But I just wanted to bring that up now that the mugwort and, you know, late Taurus season is sprouted fully. But I will say the sproutling that I made last year, it regrew this year because I think mugwort has sort of like a root system so that every year it regrows in the same spot. And sure enough, the one that I brought is sprouted again in the other section of the yard. So now this yard has a fully overrun section with wild mugwort from before. Maybe some witch lived here before, and now we've got extra that I put in last year. So anyways, here I am talking to myself, talking to you guys, but I want to get right into the astrology of this week. So we're looking at the week of May 20th to the 26th. We're coming right off of the Game of Thrones finale, which happened right after the Scorpio full moon. So very interesting. I'm recording this before that finale. Of course I'm going to watch the finale, but this season was kind of ridiculous. I'll leave it at that. But, you know, significant day, significant weekend is behind us. This intense Scorpio full moon is behind us. So now looking at the week ahead, the moon is going to be depleting in light. So we're going to be having a waning style moon. The first thing I want to talk about happens on Monday, which actually involves the moon. So the moon is in Sagittarius Monday, and it's going to make a conjunction with Jupiter at 1:05 p.m. Eastern time. So that, like we said, Jupiter in Sagittarius is our lucky, shining planet of hope and optimism and Sagittarian ideals. And the moon is arguably the most important planet in astrology. So when the moon links up with Jupiter in Sagittarius every month, you make note of it and you try to do something that requires luck, because luck is on your side. So Monday is your lucky day with moon conjuncting Jupiter in Sagittarius. Then moving on to Tuesday, we have another very important day. So I mentioned that Taurus season is pretty much over, and now we're in zippity-doo-dah Gemini season. Love the Gemini stuff. Tuesday the 21st, nice and early in the morning, we have what is known as the ingress of the sun into Gemini. That happens at 3:59 a.m. So that's when Gemini season starts for a month. But also, Mercury, the planet of communication and the ruler of Gemini, also moves into Gemini that same morning. So we have the sun and Mercury entering Mercury's home turf, Gemini, the the mutable air sign ruled by Mercury, planet of communication. So this is like a super big dose of Gemini energy, and it's also the Kazemi of Mercury and the sun. So Mercury goes through a cycle of retrogrades. There's three retrogrades per year. And whenever it makes this conjunction with the sun, it's kind of like the full moon of Mercury. And it's in the heart of the sun. So basically it's known as Kazemi. It's when Mercury is at its highest speed, because after it passes the sun, zips through its own sign of Gemini, then makes its way towards Cancer, where it's going to slow down, and then we have our next Mercury retrograde to look forward to. But that won't be happening for a little while, luckily. I'm looking at my calendar just to give you guys an answer. When does Mercury go retrograde? Well, I see it goes direct on July 31st. So it goes retrograde on... Okay, July 7th. Okay, so, you know, month of June, it's going to be very Gemini. We'll be safe, but this Kazemi, this conjunction with Mercury and the Sun, is its highest point of speed before ultimately stopping on July 7th. So this really gives you a big picture of the cycles of communication planet Mercury. Like, you can pay attention to the monthly cycle of the moon and get a sense, okay, a month has passed. You can do the same thing with Mercury, but instead of your emotions and your subconscious being the focus, the way it is with the moon, with Mercury, it's your intellect and your communication. So you think of this cycle of the last time Mercury went retrograde. In this, in the case of this year, that was in Pisces during Pisces season. Then it's going to happen again in July. So, like, you have this point of clarity on Tuesday where Mercury is the farthest away from its retrogrades, and it's also at its highest speed, and it's also in the early degrees of its home sign of Gemini conjunct the Sun. So Tuesday early morning, you know, if you have to send an email blast, if you have to put anything in the mail, if you have to communicate any message of importance or sign any document, save it for Tuesday morning. And this is how you use astrology. You know these significant dates. You have to look at the date, look at your to-do list, and think, what can I do that's mercurial that I can make my life easier by choosing to do it on Tuesday? So that's happening Tuesday. Nice little aspect for us. I hope I covered enough information there for y'all. And then, what do we have going on later? Not a whole lot to discuss. Wednesday, though, we can talk about Wednesday. So Mars is going to be making a sextile to Uranus in Taurus. So Mars is now in Cancer, moved into Cancer last week. You might have noticed a shift in your energy. Gemini Mars was doing real well, zipping around, active, moving, jumping from thing to thing, giving you that active energy of an air sign like Gemini. But now Mars is in the water sign of Cancer, where it's more focused on your emotions, your safety, your domesticity, your safe zone in your shell, which is the domestic realm. That's why we have the crab symbolism. But Mars in Cancer, sextiling Uranus in Taurus. So despite Mars being sort of in its fall in Cancer, Uranus in Taurus is that spark. It's that unexpected jolt of energy that can, you know, throw some change into the mix. It mixes stuff up. It changes things up. So on Wednesday, when Mars sextiles Uranus, you can, you know, change some things up in the routine of your body. If you have a workout routine, it can be a sexual thing. If you take Mars as a sexual planet, can throw some spice into your love life on that day. So yeah, like, looking at these main aspects, everything else that happens this week is basically involving the moon. And, you know, for the sake of simplicity, I think I'll just leave it at this Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. This week, basically, try to get your shit together in the beginning of the week. Try to do something lucky on Monday with Moon conjunct Jupiter. Try to send out that email blast, ask the right question, state the right statement. Do that Mercury thing on Tuesday morning when we have the Kazemi of Mercury in the Sun in early Gemini. Very potent day. Take advantage of that. Then Wednesday, you know, add that spark to your Mars life. If you feel dragged down by Mars in Cancer, use Wednesday's energy to shake things up. I'm seeing if I can give you any other good moon stuff. I guess Friday, the moon is going to trine Mercury at, well, that's way too early in the morning. Yeah, guys, you know, we're going to be approaching Memorial Day weekend this upcoming weekend, which is crazy. So, yeah, this is a good week to get it all done in the beginning of the week. And it's funny, you know, this is such a Gemini week, and last week was our Gemini card. And it's funny, too, last week we had Teresa Reed, the tarot lady, as a guest, and she's a Gemini, and she talks about being a Gemini often. And the more I listen to her talk, the more I'm like, yeah, she's totally Gemini. So, and it's funny too, you know, as I pull my cards out and shuffle not as good as Scarlet shuffles, it's funny too, the week that we got the Hierophant 2 weeks ago, it was like the Taurus people in my life were, you know, front and center. And this past week when we had the Lovers, Gemini as the card of the week, it's like the Geminis in my life came up and were front and center doing their awesome Gemini stuff too. So it's interesting, you know, when I'm doing these shows on my own, there's a different element when I pull the cards. Because Dan is not Scarlet. You know what? I'm just going to say it right here. I pull reversals. So if we get a reverse card, I'm going to make note of that. The last time I hosted a show on my own, the card was upright. The Page of Swords was upright. But that's another thing with tarot, you know, whether or not you use reversals. I like that Scarlet doesn't use them and never has used them. And I like that she pulls the card of the week in that manner. Because reversals change things up, but she ain't here right now. So I'm trying to wait for the perfect card as I sit here and shuffle. So let's see what we get. Oh! All right, we got an upright card. We got the Queen of Cups upright, to be sure. So, water of water, that's the way I see it, because all the queens in the court cards are associated with the water element, and cups is water. So the Queen of Cups shows a woman sitting on her throne that actually has a seashell at the top of the throne with two little, like, mermaid cherub angel things, but they're mermaids, so it's very fishy. And she is sitting on with water at her feet, kind of on like a little beach, and she's holding a pretty damn crazy cup. It doesn't even look like a cup. You know what it looks like when I look at this, and I've never even thought about this? It looks like the freaking Ark of the Covenant from Indiana Jones, because it has two angels on each side. It doesn't look like a cup at all. So she's holding this, like, it almost looks like an alien transmitter or something, but it's apparently a cup with like a cap on top of it. Kind of looks like there's like fruits. But she's wearing, you know, her blue cloak, cape, and she's kind of like gazing into this cup that doesn't look like a cup. It looks like the Ark of the Covenant. So the Queen of Cups, you know, I think of the court cards usually as people that kind of pop into your life. And if a Queen of Cups person comes into your life, they are feminine and empathic, because cups is all about your emotions and everything. So I guess when I'm trying to look at our astrology and think, like, I think of this week as very air based, but I guess Mars is in a water sign. The moon is going to be aspecting these different planets. But yeah, the Queen of Cups is a great card to get. You know, it makes me think of like emotional well-being, like the good feels. And this time of year is Gemini season, which is very mental. It's the bumblebees buzzing through the flowers under the sun right before summer really kicks in, but you're like already there. You're like jumping around. But it's like this Queen of Cups card, I feel like, pay attention this week to some person that's going to come into your life that functions as this queen, this top, you know, feminine authority figure that rules the good feels. And I can think of some Queen of Cups type people in my life that come to mind. So maybe they'll make a reappearance in my life. But the element of water, you know, it's very psychic. It's very mystical. And the Cups cards are nice, feel-good cards. You know, I'm not going to lie. I said it feels like more of an air sign week because of all this Gemini action. But if you ask me what suit I prefer, cups or swords, I would say cups. The swords cards can be kind of not fun, but cups cards make you feel good. So that's a good sign. I think we have a good week ahead of us. You know, we have this Gemini banger right at the beginning of the week, and then we get this Queen of Cups energy to like give you a nice little nudge of the feel good vibes. So there, I did it. I read tarot for you all and gave you astrology. And now it's time for our interview. So stay tuned and enjoy our very fun and very wide-ranging conversation with Mary Bissino, astrologer, psychic, and clairvoyant.
So on today's episode of Cosmic Keys, we are delighted to be speaking with Mary Bissino. Mary is a professional astrologer. She has been in the metaphysical domain professionally for 30 years now. She was a part of the first metaphysical talk radio show back in 1981 in Tampa Bay, Florida, called Cosmic Conditions. Back before we had our podcast the way we do today. She achieved her Reiki mastership in 2005, trained with Hopi and Pueblo First Nation shamans all through the 90s. And currently, I discovered Mary via Joe Roop's show, Lighting the Void, where she gives monthly astrology forecasts and even call-in readings on his show every month during the new moon. So welcome to Cosmic Keys, Mary. We're really excited to talk to you today.
Oh, thank you. It's a blessing from me, too, for us always to connect. Hello, Scarlett, and bless you, Dan and Scarlett, to be able to share and spread more seeds of light to everybody.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you. We're so happy to have you on today. And it's so great to speak with another astrologer. And I'm always curious with astrologers and tarot readers and kind of finding out their origin story or when they first become interested in astrology. Could you tell us a bit about your early life? Were you raised with any particular religion or spirituality, and then how you kind of came to discover astrology for yourself?
Thank you. It's an interesting mix with the family lineage. On my mother's side, there's the Scottish, and her father was full Cherokee Native American. And on my father's side, we have the Northern Italian, and he had women in that line, Northern Italy, close to, you know, the border there, that were what they call strega. And strega is an Italian term for the witch or one with sight. You know, and given the fact that I'm born in the Smoky Mountains and born on Halloween night, can you only imagine how that was growing up in a predominant Christian Baptist type of relative family line? So I had a father that was very much scientific, you know, the whole electrical engineering, architectural on site, head of the contractors with both Oak Ridge National Lab. So that whole uranium, atomic bomb, secret stuff, Manhattan Project, all of that. And then we left the Smoky Mountains to go when I was quite young because he got hired by NASA. So I had this really scientific left brain educated father, and my mother was sighted as well. And so I was closer to the mountain women that knew about the herbs and the land, and I just wanted to be outside all the time. My earliest memory was when I'm in Tennessee. I'm 5 years old. I'm laying out, just laying with my back on the, in a nice summer sky, because I was always out there stargazing, and I, this lifetime. And I'm laying there, and my parents come out, of course, somewhere probably around 9 or 9:30 because all the property was fenced and everything's wondering where their daughter is. And so mom comes to God, and she says, okay, Mary Lynn, which later on one of my friends said, you know, that's Merlin. The fact that your name is Mary Lynn, it's like in Tennessee they say it Merlin. That's the way they say it. Of course, I didn't make that connection until my 20s when somebody said, listen, the way you say that sounds just like M-E-R-L-I-N. I'm like, woo, didn't make that connection. So long story short, she comes out and she's like, okay, honey, what are you doing? It's time to go to bed. And I'm still just laying there in my childlike wonder, amazement gaze, looking up at the stars. And I said, she said, what are you doing? And I said, did you fall asleep? And I said, no, I'm trying to figure out how to get back home. And she went, okay, this is your house. You know, I'm talking to a five-year-old. This is your house. I'm your mom. Your dad's inside talking to your brother. And this is your home. This is Earth. You know, this is your home. And I said, no. My real home. So I was literally being encoded. I didn't know those words then, of course. I could feel the electromagnetic, I've come to know. I could feel the downloads. I could feel the energy going into my innermost being. And I always was attuned to the stars. So once I began to study the Egyptian Book of the Dead and astronomy and listening to some of the NASA cosmic stuff and all the Oak Ridge secret stuff, I mean, I went all into this, the paranormal and the supernatural when it was still very woo-woo. Now you can just about talk about anything, but you know, you didn't bring up any of that kind of stuff, and less so in the mountains. And I was, and still am, happy that I had that early Holy Spirit Christian training. My mountain mamaw was one that never condemned me or judged me, nor my Baptist preacher uncle that was her son. So I had that, which is very rare in the mountains, you know, them just saying she has sight, she sees things, she knows things, she can interpret dreams, she just knows things. So I had that umbrella of protection and acceptance. And then I had the other side that was challenging, which was nice, with my father when I first started working with, then we didn't call them oracle cards, we called them tarot cards, and it was the Rider-Waite deck. And when I was exploring that when I was 13 and 14 years old, my dad, being the scientific type that he was, came in and said, let me see those cards. And he shuffled them and he shuffled them and he said, now read them. And so I told him what I felt. He said, I'm going to pick three cards and you tell me what it means. And I said, okay. And as you know, Scarlett, there's, you know, that deck, 78 cards. So mm-hmm. He listened politely. Then he put them all back together and he shuffled them again. And he said, now what are the odds that that same message would come back? And I said, I don't know, Dad. You know, I'm just kind of getting into it myself. And I could tell he had a little bit of a gruff attitude about it, like it was just way too out there. And the same exact cards came out. And I looked at him, and he looked at me, and I'm like, I do not know how that happened. I don't have an explanation for you, but I think that spirit just smacked your engineering side with, like, watch this.
That's
so fascinating. So then, you know, yeah. And my first tarot deck came. It is. And, well, that, you know, and then Dad said, I think it's just you. So from that point on, it was like he would somewhat talk about UFOs with me because he was very closed-mouthed about NASA and the whole government thing. But when I ask a direct question, you know, like, do you think, Dad, we would go on evening promenade walks because that's kind of what Italians and the Spanish people do. And I said, do you believe that there's other beings or citizenry out there in the star worlds? There's so many galaxies, Dad, and we haven't even scratched what it is. And we were on a walk and he stopped, and it's just so famous for him. And we stopped and he said, I shudder to think that we would be the most intelligent life forms out there. Mm. And then I knew that he knew, and he got it, and it was okay to, you know, he liked that I had the mystical on the side. He knew I was going to dovetail the two. He knew they were going to walk in tandem with me, and they do, because I say to people, I don't care if you believe in reincarnation. I don't care if you don't believe in UFOs, but remember the definition of it is unidentified flying object. Or in Florida, when I went to all the MUFON meetings and stuff with my friends, there were underwater, you know, there were also aquatic unidentified type of sightings and objects. So I just say to people in your life, remain being an open-minded skeptic, be teachable, because no one is always right. So be teachable. So to answer your question, finally, I was always a natural visionary, intuitive, saw things, knew things, the dream thing that we come to know as lucid dreaming. I remember my being 9 years old, and I looked at the end of my bed, and there was a whole bunch of spirits, and it irritated me. I didn't get scared. It was irritating. So I looked at them, and I said, look, I want to go to bed, so you all need to go, and if you need to talk to me or tell me anything, you're only allowed to come in the daytime, because I don't want you watching me when I go to sleep. So just go on. I mean, I just talk to the spirit world very matter-of-factly, and that served me very well. But astrology, I started really getting into that when I was 15, 16, and it was hard, as you know, if you studied it. It was like I studied it for 3 years, had the wrong degrees on my ascendant. Finally, as a gift, my mother took me to an astrologer in Orlando, and he corrected the chart. And I'm like, oh, God, I've been looking at 16 degrees instead of 3 degrees. And if you've ever studied astrology, that's like a really big deal. I had to unlearn a lot of what I had learned about my own chart. I still say the best way for someone to understand the art of astrology is to learn your own chart. Start with your star map. That's your soul signature. And if you'll learn the recipe of the 12 sign energy frequencies, if you'll learn your 12 zones or houses, if you'll understand the dynamics and the give and take and flow, the light and shadow of the planets, then it's just a matter of where they're positioned, you know? So when I went to that astrologer, which is Bill Hansen, he got very well known in Orlando. He looked at me and he said, you don't need me. I said, excuse me? And he said, you don't need me. He said, you're a natural for this. He said, you'll take the ball and run with this. He said, you're absolutely meant to do this. And he looked at me, which this is really woo-woo for back then, and he looked at me and he said, you're just doing this again, this lifetime. You've got a long trail of talking to stars. And I still say to people come up to me, Dan and Scarlett, and they'll say, I don't believe in astrology. And I'll say, neither do I. And they look at me, and I said, I don't think it's something that you have to believe in. I believe it's a great form of intuitive therapy. It's like the medicine wheel. It's like understanding the dynamics of your elements. Are you more earthy? Are you more cerebral, mental, airy? Are you more fiery and enthusiastic? I mean, it's not something you believe in. It's something that helps you understand the sculpture that you are. So to me, astrology is a soft science like psychology. You know, it's something that helps you understand your archetypes. It helps you to begin to unravel a lot of what can inhibit us in our childhood stories of this lifetime. And it helps you to get free. It helps you to expand past your own self-inflicted dramas and help you undo your psychic knots and your emotional leashes. So I love it for forecasting because planets orbit and continue to orbit. So as a timing tool, it's the best thing I've found.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it's like it's not very diagnostic because it seems like there's endless amounts of meaning for one astrological thing. So it's like you don't really believe in it. It's just you either use it properly and effectively to your benefit or you don't, you know. And at the end of the day, you have to sort of decide whether or not it's helping or whether or not it's resonating. And if it is, it's super helpful. But if you're just like trying to debunk it or if you're just trying to dismiss it or prove it wrong, it's never going to work.
Well, it's the same thing as coming into appreciating an oracle reading or how the tarot speaks to you. I would often say to my clients, it's not that the cards or the chart has any power, any hold, or any sway over you. It's like, look at it this way. It's like interpreting a dream during the day. You know, it's like these are the symbols. Instead of you straining to remember your dream, this is like being able to give you some visual imagery. And there's a big difference, of course, Dan and Scarlett. You know, there's a big difference between going to a Leo astrologer versus going to a Capricorn astrologer. You know, you're going to get a lot more technical stuff with a Capricorn per se or a Virgo astrologer, a Leo or an Aquarian or a Gemini astrologer. They're going to take you on a journey. And that's the approach I like to do when I'm doing a client's chart. I'll say to them, thank you for allowing me to help navigate you through your stars. And like Alan Oken and Carl Jung took it from a standpoint of when you go into understanding your birth signature map, you know, the portrait of the heavens above you at the time you chose to incarnate on Earth, we're going to go visit and I'm going to give you some star stories. And sometimes I bring in the constellations around someone's, you know, top three, as I call it, their sun, moon, and rising sign. Go study the constellations at this degree of Leo, at this degree of Scorpio, or this degree of Libra. And I don't know why, I still don't have an answer to it, even astrologically, but from 13, 14 years on, I realized that tarot cards love Libra people. They always read better for Libra people. Libra people understood them quicker than anybody else I ever taught in a seminar. And I said, I don't have a tangible answer for you, but I'm going to tell you, I've been doing this long enough, that tarot cards love Libra people. I don't know if Pamela Coleman Smith, the artist of some of the original decks, was a Libra, or Paul Foster Waite was a Libra. I don't know, but tarot cards love Libra people. And when a Libra gets into tarot, I say to him, you're going to rock on. You're going to be a rock star with this, because that deck is going to be just like a pet dog.
Mary, did you know that I'm a Libra?
I did not.
Well, I'm really happy to hear you say that. That just makes me feel good.
That's not blowing smoke. It's something that I have been, as a researcher, I've just been fascinated by all these years. It's like, what is it? Okay, Libra's ruled by Venus, la, 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 la. But it's more than that. It's like maybe in the Oracle of Delphi, maybe that was Libra too. You know, maybe that. But, you know, I've run all the theories. You know, Libra, you know, it's late September, so there's the autumnal equinox, and there's that, you know, the October energies. Maybe, I don't know. But tarot cards love Libra. You watch in your own studies. You watch when among your friends. And I would literally do this. Like, I would pick friends that they weren't studying tarot. That's harder nowadays, because everybody's a tarot reader nowadays or an astrologer. But I would pick people, and I'd like get a Gemini, and I'd get a Sag. I'd get a very impatient, you know, sign like Aquarius, you know, that somebody wanted to debate me over the whole thing. And then I would just pick a Libra, and I would say, okay, I'm going to let each of you shuffle these cards, and I just want you to pick one card. And I'm telling you, 100% of the time, the card for the Libra, and they're just like, wow, that just spoke to my heart and my soul. And you know, I know Libras like to be, you know, very congenial and diplomatic and all that, but I'm telling you, you could tell by their face that it wasn't fake. And I'd say to them, you need to go get yourself, tell somebody to gift you a tarot deck, or you need to get into this, even if you just do it for yourself. And that's what I'm trying to say. They will speak as like a BFF, you know, that for a Libra, the tarot deck that they choose, there'll be one. You can have 50 of them, but there'll be one deck there. I still have the original deck that I got. And that and that one deck is like it takes on your energetic signature, but it's like it, you won't even have to strain to be objective. It will always talk to the Libra. They like Libras, and I say that all the time. And I'm not a Libra, but I say to people, I'm telling you, tarot likes Libra.
That's so funny you said that. And it's very true what you said about like the deck thing, because I have a ton of decks. I love to collect them, but there's one deck, my original Rider-Waite deck, that I use all the time and definitely has that kind of energy signature aspect that you mentioned.
Well, I used to collect a lot of decks, and then I started gifting a lot of them to people because I, you know, if a deck resonates with me, yes, I'll own it. I mean, I had a whole bookshelf full of them, and I thought, you know what? I'm really wanting to actively stay in the now moment, in the present. But my original deck was a Rider-Waite deck. It was the Albano-Waite deck. It was one of the original collector decks of the Rider-Waite. They do them like every 20 years. It's like a, you know, a golden anniversary, blah, blah, blah. And what happened was I was with a bunch of friends in Cocoa Beach. All my male friends were surfers. So we were doing our like, you know, go get French fries and be teenagers and go to the beach. And we happened to go into a surf shop. And as we walked up to the surf shop, there was one little wire rack, and there was one tarot deck that was on that wire rack. And I'd never seen them before, you know, this lifetime. And I walked up and I went, tarot, just like that. And the very hippie, bearded, you know, loved the beach kind of, you could just see starfish jumping out of his hair, you know, kind of a thing, almost like a white Rastafarian type of person. And Cocoa Beach said, you said that correctly. And I said, what? He said, do you speak French? And I said, no, I'm taking Spanish in school. And he said, and you're wearing purple. He said, your swimsuit is purple. He said, you need to take that deck. That deck wants to go home with you. And I said, really? And he said, yeah. He said, because people come in here all the time and go, tarot, tarot. He goes, they don't know how to even say it. He said, you came right in and said tarot. And he said, that deck needs to go home with you. So my first deck was magically manifested into me. And that's the one that I still have. You know, I mean, I rebought the Albano collector edition because the tarot decks are often identified by the art on the back of the card. The symbol or the art on the back of the card tells the age of it, the signature of the anniversary of the year that it was when you go into the lineage of Rider-Waite. It's interesting. It's real interesting. Like, you know, in the 80s, they started coming out with featuring the Aquarian tarot, and then there was the Morgan Greer deck, and they started doing all kinds of different decks after that. You know, there's the cat tarot and there's the steampunk tarot and all that. I'm like, okay, I'm a traditionalist. I don't relate to all that. Pretty, but I don't relate to all that. Now, I do love the animal spirit oracle decks. You know, on my radio shows, I interviewed and went to see Ted Andrews before he passed away. And he was wonderful with, and then in 1988, I was the first person in the Florida area to interview David Carson and Angela Wernicke, who did the great animal medicine cards. They had just come out by Bear & Company, and I couldn't wait to get them on the phone and interview them on the show. And we had David, Jamie Sams was busy at the time out west, so I had David Carson, who's still on Facebook and still does post about the animal medicine cards, and the artist was Angela Wernicke, and I had them on, and we opened up lines for people to actually get their animal medicine card, and David would interpret. And let me tell you, in 1988, that was absolutely fantastic, which is why I like to do instantaneous oracle card readings for people when I do media events, when we do a live show, because, you know, there's no way that you need to go audition yourself. It's live, it's in the moment, and you can't fake it. You know, it's either real, it either hits home or it doesn't. So it's gutsy and it's risky, but that's the way I stay on point with my guides. You know, it's like the way my guides go, whip it into shape, girl. You can either do this live and spontaneous. There's no looking it up. There's no going on the internet. There's no cheating in your little book. It's just like, boom, the person's on the phone. Do it. Pull a card, say it right away. And that's what Joe says all the time. Joe Rupi, just like, that stuff just flows out of you. And I'm like, okay, Joe, it's not just this lifetime.
Well, Mary, you mentioned
this lifetime I've been doing the mystical thing.
You mentioned your guides, and that's something we haven't really explored on the show, but I hear a lot about it in the spiritual community. Could you sort of explain, like, either how you established a relationship with them, or like who you think they are, or how the relationship works between you and your guides?
I always had I don't want to use current definitions. My current definitions would probably be my ancestral elder guides I came to know through my Native American ceremonial practices. But quiet time in nature, meditation, I, as a child, knew that I never walked alone. Now, I, as a child, attributed that to nature was very alive, and I really thought everybody had these invisible counselors and guides. And, you know, I wasn't that girl in the woods that was afraid of the snakes or the spiders, because I just knew I could just I guess I was telepathically connecting into them. I'm talking now about then, but I just had this sense of, I'm never alone. There's always wise eyes looking out for me. And then when there would be like the bully in the school, or when I had to become the hero and put the whoop butt on somebody that was picking on somebody that was crippled or had an affliction, and I rose to be that warrioress in that moment, I could feel that there was forces coming through my back, you know, like working with me, like, and through my eyes, the windows of the soul, truly, to back the bully down, you know, to save the person that they were going to try to beat up or and one time in school, you two will appreciate this. One time in school, there was like this big brouhaha that was beginning to go on in a racial way when I was in junior high. It was like all of a sudden it was like, I guess nowadays we'd term it like a gang type of thing. And this is another story about the guides. And so my brother, my Leo brother, loved black snakes. And he had like a really neat terrarium kind of thing that he had built. It was really big. And like he took a bunch of fish tanks and everything. And he had these three black snakes. Well, the cheerleaders came to me and they said, we're really scared. They're targeting us. And these mean girls are wanting to beat us up. And I said, oh, I can take care of that, because word had gotten out. She must be a witch. You know, she's born on Halloween, blah, blah, blah. When you're in junior high, you know, I think it was like an eighth grade. So without telling my brother, because he would have been really upset with me, I got a paper bag. And I took two of those snakes with me to school. Yeah, I really did. I took them with me to school. And I said to the cheerleaders when the classes were changing, I said, meet me in the middle part of where all the lockers are. Meet me, because that's when they're going to challenge. They put the word out, you know, tomorrow when we exchange classes, we're going to meet you and we're going to beat you up and all that. So I had them in my locker because I knew it was they would survive. You know, like I had it all figured out how they'd survive. And there had to be guides helping me, because the snakes just pleasantly stayed in the locker in the paper bag with some grass. It was really weird. Anyway, so classes changed. And as sure as part of it was prophetic, I'm sure, here comes like seven of these angry, mean girls that were of a particular race, and they came toward this one, like kind of like a Caribbean girl that was scared because they didn't like it that she was half and half, I guess. I don't know. But anyway, they came up, and I came out, and I used the line from The Wizard of Oz, and I said, be gone, for you have no power here. And they said, what are you going to do about it? But I could tell they were a little afraid of me, because I was like the woo-woo girl. And I opened up the locker, and I took that paper bag out, and I released the snakes right there. I mean, everybody went screaming everywhere. The cheerleaders started laughing, even though they were scared. And I thought, all I had in my mind was, I have got to get those snakes, or my brother is going to kill me. Because, you know, a Leo temper is like, you just don't mess with it. So I gathered up the snakes. I knew the word would get out that I was going to have to go to the principal. So I just literally skipped school and called my mom and said I was sick so I could get those snakes back home. So the way that I started to develop was like, I trusted that invisible force, I guess. You know, it's like I knew that it was really cray-cray what I was doing. I was going to get in trouble, but I knew that it was the right thing. Like when this energy, it was more of an energy, more than a voice. Now, when I really came to know one of my guides, which would go against most of mountain religions, I assure you, I was battling a very serious disease challenge in my life when I was 21. Don't like to name diseases, don't like to give life to them. And when I had gotten done talking to the doctor, I said, okay, I want to go to the mountains. Then I lived in Florida. And I want to go to the beach, and I want to do past life regressions. At that point, I connected the dots. The T got crossed. I had always known that I had had this drawing to Persian things. Not Iran, Persia. And I would like see these symbols in my dreams and all. I loved the whole idea of those finger symbols. I mean, when I was a child, I went into some kind of music store and I said to Dad, I have to have those. There's a name for them, but those, when they do the belly dancing, those finger things that they do that they make noises with, I wanted to get like a little Aladdin's lamp type of a thing. That was, these kind of things kept coming into my life when I would see them. They were like talismans for me, or magical. So when I was in a deep past life regression with a trainer, a full Persian looking male came. And I'm like, oh my God. And I mean, the feeling that came into me is, and I said, I know you in the meditation. I know you. Who are you? I've known you across time and space. And he said, I'm your soulmate. We've been together many times. I'm here to tell you I'm the Persian. I'm a guide that works with you for this entire incarnation. I'm like, how come we're not together? Because I'm like 21. And I'm like, I want you. Where are you? Come manifest to be in my world. Because you're it. You know, you're it for me. When a Scorpio tells you, you're it for me, it's just like, you're it for them. You know, so he's like, no, no, no. And I said, what a cruel thing that we're separated like this. He said, no, you'll understand it later on. It's better than I'm here and you're there. But we've been together before and we'll be together again. I'm like, so how am I going to be interested in anybody else? I mean, you know, Scorpios are like so tunnel visioned. And he said, trust me, it'll work out. But he said to me, I'm the one, it's kind of like the Beatles song, when I find myself in times of trouble, Mother Mary comes to me. So I'd always understood the Madonna energies, even though I wasn't Catholic. I knew that that was a big sign of healing when I saw that for clients or myself. But that, he said, I am your main guide. And the big things, you don't call on me, the big things that happen in your life, when you see me, know that they're being taken care of. So I know I have the Persian because you had asked me to name them. The other thing that my younger brother, who's since passed over, my younger brother used to squeal with delight when I would get angry, because I really work with tempering anger. And he would say, are you going to let loose the thing? Are you going to let loose the thing? And John was like 7 years younger than me. And I'm like, no, I can't let it loose. And we just called it the thing. But if somebody was being cruel to a child or an older person or an animal, I, of course, would try to step in. So if there was going to be the confrontation, then the Scorpio-Aquarius mix girl here would get right in the middle of it going, you need to cease and desist or some bad stuff's going to start happening to you because this girl's not afraid. And if we fight, one of us is going to have a problem, and I'm good with all of it. So I wasn't the walk-away girl. So a couple of times in my life, I can count on one hand. One of them was when I was 7 years old, and I've always, one of my main totems has always been the dog. My mother had to go out for milk. This is when I came to realize that I had this guide working with me that was my protector. And believe me, it wasn't the Persian. That was different. And we came home from, you know, taking the car, going to the milk store in Tennessee and coming back. And my dog, who was really like a child, someone had hit it. And it was on the side of the road, not gross or anything, but she was dead, just like that. And I said, stop. And so mom stopped the car and I got out. Of course, my brother's crying and my mother's upset. And I said, whoever did this, it freaked my mother out. I said, whoever did this, did it on purpose. They hit her on purpose. They'll be dead in a week and they'll be dead right up there on that hill where they came across. And my mother's like, Mary, you can't say things like that's wrong. And I said, they'll be dead in a week. In 1 week. I said, and I see blue. It's a blue car. And I know. I said, now I'm going to go bury my car. In 1 week, there was a crash on the top of that hill. It was a baby blue car, and the guy had several run-ins with the law because of driving too fast and, you know, stuff like that, and he was dead up on the hill. And my dad and my mom, I remember they looked at each other at the dinner table, and Dad said, honey, you can't do those kind of things. I said, I didn't do anything. And he said, okay, but you said he'd be dead in a week, and he was dead, and it's the one that hit your car. And I said, oh, well. And mom's like, that's a little worrisome. And I said, I don't care. I saw it, and I'm fine with it. And I didn't have any guilt or anything. So I'm just being fully authentic with you. So then fast forward in my life, and when people would do mean things or whatever, that my younger brother, who wasn't born yet at that time, but he said, I love your temper. I said, I don't. He goes, no, I love it. He said, I can see like sparks coming out of your hands and your eyes and stuff. I said, I don't like it. And so when any time somebody would start to do something to irritate me, here's what he would do. Oh, are you going to let loose the thing? I'm like, cut it out, John. He goes, let it loose, let it loose. And so I can tell you that whatever that guide is, perhaps it's a holy guardian archangel, but I can tell you, I try not to go there because if I need it, results will happen.
Wow.
Because it has to be that I feel, I feel like I actually can't manifest some type of protection or control at that point. So I believe some of our guides, Dan, are accrued and earned over these different spirit walkabouts that we have. I believe that we have certain force-placed protections. Certainly in my 20s and 30s, yes, I studied the archangels. I got very much into angelology and the different names of them and pronouncing them. And the Book of Enoch by Dr. J.J. Hertak was a 7-year project for me. And I wanted to understand, you know, the angel names and how to write them and things like that. I mean, and then when I did my Reiki, when I took that 3-year period and with my Reiki teachers and I did the Reiki in 2005 during the Buddha moon, which is the full moon we've got coming up over the 17th and 18th of the 3 ascended master moons, the Buddha moon, Wesak, the one that's coming up over May 17th and 18th in this year of 2019, to me, is the most magical full moon of recalibrating your chakras, your energies, your impact points, and of course in Buddhism, releasing attachments, releasing your need to control an outcome. That's what's coming up this month. It's absolutely fabulous for everybody. If you want to up your game as a psychic, as an astrologer, as a healer, with your Reiki, with whatever it is that you're, you know, fortifying your chakras, is coming up 17th and 18th of May. So that's when I sit with my guides once a year. I don't miss it. I prioritize it. And I go out and I do the sage and the copal and the frankincense oil. And I sit down and say, teach me, show me, I'm open. And then I summon.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, I feel like I haven't had anything visual like that before, but I definitely understand what you're saying, where you feel like, you know, you're never alone, and you feel sometimes like a gut feeling to do something, or you feel like a strange sense of confidence when you usually wouldn't have it.
Yes.
to do something. And then I've just had it even with certain people I've met, like right when I meet them, I'm like, okay, there's going to be like a long lasting friendship with this person, or like, I need to like follow this person. And I definitely have lots of those experiences, but haven't really, you know, communicated or anything like that, the way you're describing.
Yeah. I think your story definitely inspires me to work on communicating with my own guides too. Cause I've had, kind of like a similar story to you in a lot of ways, where when I was younger, there was actually, and I was like, I could sense things kind of on the other side of my bed, like with sleep paralysis and stuff, I would call on a rabbit. And the rabbit would always shoo away these kind of dark energetic spirits. But I don't think I've called on that spirit guide since. It's been like 10 years. So, you know, talking to you has really kind of inspired me to get back in touch with my own guides.
Well, if I could let the land of experience, let the journey of experience, let me give you a few pearls and seeds of light here that can speed up your journey in a great way. You know, not that we don't need to go through the you know, the seeds get planted, then they have to go through their germination and gestation, and they bloom. So I get it. There's a reason and a season, and it's in that pregnant pause, and it's in that time in our garden that the flower or the herb or the fruit needs to have its time to grow and develop. And so do we, because we're spirits that came to this realm and slipped on skin to walk this world for a while. So our earthly bodies can either be a prison house of skin and bones, or it can literally be the temple of the living light. You know, it can be a temple of the divine. And here's what I say to my clients when I'm doing readings, whether I do a chart and I'm talking about the star map, or I'm doing, you know, the intuitive, clairvoyant, angelic, blah, 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 whatever they need to name it, is I say to them, let me just give you the thing that'll make this reading the most powerful it can be for this signature moment in time. I don't do any session, any phone call, any session without first doing my praise and my prayer and my affirmations to call in the guides. I bless the guides of the person. I bless the higher guides and the higher self of myself. And I say to people, you know, your guardian angels, your archangels, we always are like petitioning for things. I want to know more about this from my cards, and I'd like to know this about this year from my chart. But how about you just sit down at the beginning, before you start the ego asking, how about if you sit down and you really close your eyes and you're not multitasking anymore, You get out in nature, under the stars, in the wind, on the grass, on your porch, on the rocking chair, whatever, but you get out to where nature is the energy signature around you. And you're literally out there in the sun or out there under the stars, and you simply listen and get quiet, slow that breathing down, and just allow and summon your holy guides, whoever they happen to be at that time. You know, guides can change over different decades of your life or different, you can have a certain guide that comes in to help you through an illness, to help you through a relationship breakup or a period of difficulty in a host of ways. You know, if you lose something big financially or you're scared about a move or you're struggling with school, there'll be a specific archangel or guide that'll come around you to help you just through that big life chapter. And then it's done its job and it moves on and a new one comes in. There's some of those too. But when you sit down, the piece of advice I give everybody is, and you know how hard people do this. I mean, they've always got to be doing something. They always got to be multitasking. It's a techno-erect world, you know. And I say, go out there and sit down. Do your breathing like a waltz, like breathe in, 1, 2, 3, 4, hold it, 1, 2, 3, 4, and push out the old air, 1, 2, 3, 4. Do that full exhalation. And when you're breathing in, I found what calls my guides very quickly. It's when I breathe in, I also whisper across eternity something silently to myself in congruence with nature. As I breathe in, it's like, all is now well with my soul. And as I hold it and then exhale, the affirmation is I'm pushing that air out, because as humans, we tend to breathe quick and shallow. As I'm really pushing that exhalation out, that I learned with Buddhist meditations and fire ceremonies, as you're pushing it out, I am one with love and light, or I am one with the Almighty I Am, or Almighty I Am, imbue me. Whatever affirmations you want to do, make sure your affirmations are present tense. You know, like, love now comes to me. No, that's still something that yet needs to arrive. I am, all is now well with my soul. I now allow my sacred guides to come present and imbue me. So you're calling it in. You're actually giving your egoic, your mental, your emotional, psychological, etheric, you're giving permission for the sacred guides of light, love, and harmony to come into you. You're actually letting them come in. Now, you've set the signature tone that it has to be Almighty I Am or sacred angels. I mean, you've done your protections. You've put the light around you. All that's important. All that's important. There may be a favorite chant that you do, a mudra or a meditation chant that you do. Maybe do some Reiki symbols or actually pronounce Shokurei, or Hanso Seishin. And, you know, maybe there's actually something that you whisper that you know works for you. But whether Scarlett's going to put her hands on her cards or Dan's going to go outside and meditate a little bit before he then looks at his chart or a client's chart, that's what you want to do, because here's what happens. In the invisible, those guides are poking each other going, look at there. Look at the dedication there. I'm going to go over to Dan or Scarlett or Mary because they're making the time to respect us, to call us, and to prioritize us. There's the key. They're not trying to get the accolades and the applause themselves. They're taking the time with their physical body and their physical emotions and their thoughts, and they're actually going and sitting that vehicle down, that temple down, and saying, I allow. I allow. And that's what's important. That's what's important, that you respect the invisible source enough. Sorry, the invisible source enough to take that moment, that rich moment, and say, I get it, that you are in another realm, another dimension to help me. And it works. It absolutely works.
Yeah, it definitely is a two-way street in that way, where it is about, you know, respect. And I like what you said, too, about when you're making these statements, to do so in the present tense, because that's kind of the same with any kind of magical working. When you're stating your intention, you want to state it as it is occurring now, to kind of set that out into the world so that it does kind of come back to you. So I definitely agree. And I'm going to be doing some more meditation work and speaking to my guides soon. You've definitely inspired me. One last question I wanted to make sure to ask, too, is I find it so fascinating that you actually trained in the 90s with some shamans, and I think from the Hopi tribe, is that right?
Yeah, I went out to several trips. Sedona didn't thrill me like everybody else says it will. You know, I saw a lot of like what we call psychic Gatlinburg. Like, I went out there and, you know, I did the UFO tours and I did the medicine wheels. And I was lucky enough, he's since passed, to meet the owner of Father Sky Mother Earth Gallery, Daniel Valdez, an incredibly renowned artist out there. And we did ceremony with Daniel, and he played his flute. Part of his ceremony was the flute. And then there were other people, and like you paid for these conferences to go, and then you went outdoors and the Anipi and the sweat lodges and all that. And I visited Apache. When I went to the Hopi reservation, and you have to understand that these reservations out there, they're like in the Hopi reservation up on the Mesa, they have to still carry in water every day. Every day. I mean, you're talking about people that are, as we would call it, living off the grid. That's all they know. So I resonated. I wanted to find the tribe I resonated with. And when I went to Hopi Mesa and when I went to Taos Pueblo and did those ceremonies and stuff out there and met the actual people that lived there, not just somebody wanting to, you know, go with a certain organization and invite a bunch of people in to do a seminar. Although I went with based on that seminar, but I got off the grid and met the locals. When I went there, I knew the Zunis and the Taos and the Star. I wanted to get in touch with the Star ancestors out there. And that's when I started to really connect Star language. Remember when I was 5 years old, wanting to figure out how to get back home, you know? So the Star ancestry resonated to me most. But when I'm at my best, and I did it in Florida too with the different Onondaga Indians, and all the tribes come to Florida in winter because it's warm in Florida. So you've got 400 people and all kinds of different types of First Nations tribes that come to these nature centers and do these kind of cornmeal ceremonies and releasing and healing ceremonies and the giveaway ceremonies. And I did that for 20 years. And that's still my church. If I am outdoors and I've got the ceremonial fire and I'm saging and I'm cleansing and I was taught by them how to do certain healing outdoor ceremonies, but to me the most rich thing mystically is for me to be able to be in the back row attending one of those ceremonies. I don't need to be known. I don't need to be called on. I just want to merge with the fire and the drumbeat of my heart and just, I mean, in the directions and listen for what nature creatures want to come out. So it's by actually getting yourself out there and participating in inviting heaven to earth, in a sense, whatever that is for you. For some people, it might be they do martial arts outside or they do Tai Chi or whatever, but you've got to get that because we're on our Mother Earth, but we're spirit creatures. So when you can start to do that tangible as above, so below, heaven to earth, I believe it rounds you out as a prophet, mystic, oracle reader, you know, star interpreter. I believe there's something about that when you're actually among the herbs, learning the flower essences, understanding the healing holistic properties of the oils, why you're eating the rainbow, why you're drawn to watermelon this year, and it was pineapple or green peppers last year. All of this is spirit speaking to you. So I believe if we actually can start looking at it from, it's mystical what Scarlett and Dan are really craving as far as food items this year. It's the chakra color. It's the energetic vibrations that are going into your body. It's like you're literally putting fuel in your tank. So start doing that overarching broad brush of like, I've never eaten so many cucumbers in my life. What's up with that? You know, research it. It's speaking to you.
Yeah, that's really interesting how you can connect like food or food cravings to like spiritual stuff. And with me, it's like sometimes just habits, you know. Sometimes I am really healthy in certain ways, but other activities go to the back burner. And then there's other times where I sort of let loose and then open myself to be able to sort of have more of a loose spiritual experience and free flowing and less strict on my. But I feel like my routine is constantly changing, and sometimes it's just like a gut feeling, like, you gotta stop smoking pot for a few months, or you've gotta go to the gym more, or you've gotta do yoga, or eat this, or eat that. But it's never the same for me. But it's like I don't know why, I just feel intuitively sometimes I need to change up my routine like that.
Well, and it's like, for me, a lot of times, maybe you don't have to smoke the cannabis to get the medicinal qualities. It has to have heat. So I might make lemon poppy seed muffins, or I might, you know, do the ever famous cannabis brownies, you know, with some nice rich butter and puree up some avocado and put that in the actual batter, even if you use a Ghirardelli brownie mix, or you do lemon poppy seed mix, you know, one of the healthier mixes, and put it in there and then immediately freeze them, you know, take out the small portion that you want. But when I address a certain herb as a medicine healer, then, you know, it goes back to our childhood habits of, people will say, I need to have mashed potatoes, I need to have comfort food, or macaroni and cheese is my comfort food. That always relates back to poignant moments of your childhood. You know, for some people it's ice cream, you know, or pizza. But though, if it's not the food, it's got to do with what's behind the reason that you're in your subconscious. Examine that. Don't judge it. Don't criticize it. But it's like, wow, I'm really craving chocolate. On a medicinal level, it means that you need magnesium, period. Go to Walmart, get some magnesium powder, mix it in your smoothie.
Right.
You know, just incorporate that. But if the cannabis, or if the CBD, or the pizza, or the, I got to have chocolate chip mint ice cream, if that's becoming, if you're needing it more than you want it, then it's a problem.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, and one of
spirit ringing a bell.
One of the things that for me has been so rewarding about kind of going along my spiritual journey is I pretty much consider myself a pagan, because I've always really found my sense of the divine in nature, and just to see how that does carry over into other areas of my life too, because once you start having that spiritual connection to nature and to plants and vegetables and the animals and all of that kind of stuff, it in turn, I think, does help me or focus me on making, you know, healthier decisions when it comes to eating and trying to eat more seasonal. So it is kind of this more than just a spiritual path. It's like this all-encompassing way of recognizing nature and appreciating nature in our daily routines and our habits. So it becomes so much of a lifestyle in a way.
Our Earth Mother, you know, we're on this blue-green jewel, and the goddess, she is our Earth Mother. You know, she is the orb of our earthiness, you know, and we, as the natives taught me, you know, we slip on skin and walk this world for a while, and the native peoples revere our Earth Mother. Oh, absolutely. And so do the Buddhist. And I remember one time this friend of mine in Indian Rock Beach said, he was like an engineer too, you know, a Sagittarian, had to all go explore all kinds of truth things. And his wife was like, oh God, please go with him to this meditation and tell me it's clear, that it's not too woo-woo and all that. She's a Virgo, he's a Sag. And I said, okay. So he wanted me to go with him to this Vietnamese older monk that had left Vietnam and was doing Buddhist type of meditations. So we go to this, there might have been eight people, you'll love this, especially that Scorpio sarcastic part of me. So we go, and there's, everybody's meditating. The guy, the Buddhist monk had such a sweet energy about him, speaking about ritual, Scarlett. So we're sitting there, and all of a sudden, and in Florida you get a lot of this, like in California, you get these people that need to be attention hogs, you know, and energy vampires. And so this woman, instead of just meditating, starts like, and this is in the 90s, she's channeling, you know, she's like all that in a bag of chips type of a thing. So she starts like, kind of like scary channeling, you know, like when Seth, you know, Jane Roberts would throw her head back and do the Seth stuff. And it wasn't that the material wasn't good, but it looked creepy to an onlooker, right? So she looks like, honest to God, she looked like she was like possessed. That's the first thing that came into my mind. So here comes the warrior in me. Here comes the warrior, just like, okay, girl, keep it to yourself. And she's in the center of the room, and she's starting to say all these, she's trying to do all this prophetic type of stuff. So she points her finger, and she points her finger toward me, and she said something. I said, take your finger off of me, and don't be prophesying to me, because I didn't give you the right. You need to back the truck up and pump your brakes, because not me, girl, not me. And so then afterwards, and the Buddhist guy was, so she just shut up. You know, I said, you're done. So then, you know, I let her do her thing. I allow, but when she pointed her finger at me, it's just like, oh no, I rebuke. So anyway, so afterwards, she came out of her air quotes trance. You know, it's like, oh, I don't know what happened. And I'm thinking, yeah, right, bite me. But anyway, so my first rise up was, that I wanted to confront the demon because I could see it. I mean, I could see that she had an obsessive, possessing demon that was going on, and she was finding fancy with it. And I was like, that's not going to infect my presence. That's not happening. I mean, you can have it all you want to. So the Buddhist priest afterwards said to me, did you see the spirit that was with her? And I said, yes, sir, I did. He said, and did you sense the darkness of it? Did you sense that it was more demonic? And I said, yes, sir, I did. And I said, I'm trying not to judge, but I saw what I saw. And he said, let me give you a different take on it. He said, did you want to attack it? I said, yes. He goes, did you want to protect the group? I said, yes, sir. And he said, let me give you a different take on it that'll help you for the rest of your life. Now, I call this an immortal effect. And my definition of that is this one moment in Indian Rocks Beach by this one of five times that I was in the presence of this Vietnamese Buddhist priest changed my perspective for the rest of this incarnation. That's my definition of an immortal effect. And he said, I looked at it from a perspective, and this is the energy that I sent the demon. I looked at it from the perspective of all the places that the demon could have invaded her and had her come. It came to the circle of meditation that day. So I said to the demon, of all the places you could be, thank you for coming here to seek some kind of light and some kind of answers. I'm honored that you would be here to perhaps see it a different way. And I'm like, bam. I said, never thought of it that way. Never got it. That's perfect. He said, don't always attack. Understand that if it's in your presence, much alchemy can happen simply because it came where you were. So he said, maybe perhaps even unbeknownst to the demonic spirit, light got it there. The demon wasn't able to stop it from happening. And I'm like, oh, that's rich. That's really rich. And I'm telling you, I had never looked at it like that. My whole perspective was, if it's shadow, if it's demon, it's not that we can't learn from it, but I have to, you know, that I got to step in, got to protect myself, got to protect everybody else. You know, it was just like the warlord came up that I'd had many lifetimes of being. So from then I understood it, and he shape-shifted my whole perspective of that, which I teach all the time. It's just like, okay, you know, okay, look at it from a different perspective of all the places on the planet that demon could have come.
Yeah.
Nor did that Buddhist priest correct me for backing that demon up. You know, the priest didn't say I did wrong by saying, take your finger off of me. It's just like, you need to pump your brakes and back it up because not this girl. You don't want to mess with me. I'll call the thing.
Nice. Yeah, that's crazy. But that's a good way to look at it, to deal with those like negative energies like that and everything. So we're getting towards the end, Mary. We just wanted to ask you one last question. So I guess like you can kind of consider everything that we're a part of sort of like the new age community. And we just wanted to gauge where do you think we are in this new age metaphysical community? Like based on your involvement going back 30 years, like how has it changed and where do you see it going right now?
It's a great question. Thank you. I feel like that in the 80s and the 90s, the visionaries, the way showers, the truth seekers were very adamant with their boots on the ground to go to the seminars, meet the authors, do the work, get out and do the ritual, as Scarlett referenced, get out into nature. It's not always about needing to be around groups of people that are like-minded, but actually get out there, learn, study, especially pre-internet. But even though the technology is available to us, how many people really take the time to, I think the technology is distracting a lot of light workers. They're not taking the time to focus and let the seed bloom, you know, into the flower, but it is. We're too impatient. There's a little bit of ADD. But truthfully, I saw the shift when we went from 1999 into like 2003, 4 or 5. I started feeling the shift, and what my guides told me was, of all the things that people have studied, once we get to 2008, we're really going to have to start living it, breathing it, being it, not just studying it, not just attending the ceremony or the ritual. We're going to need to actually be like the light wands, like you're going to have to activate the magic wand that you are, the rub the genie lamp. And you're that genie that gets released. You're that lamp and that genie. And you've got to actually get out there and make a difference with your light signatures instead of just, oh, I've studied this, or I graduated Reiki, or, you you know, I've done this many radio shows, or I've written a book, or, you know, I do cards. No, it's about being it, not just doing it. Do you see the shift?
Yeah, definitely.
So I believe now, encapsulating it, I believe now that we are soldiers of fortune. There is a battle of light and dark. It isn't that I can't learn from my shadow self, but I believe that we have to be more, in a sense, fast and furious, that if we sense that something is an energy vampire or has greedy, too needy, grabbing at our energy, wanting the beautiful diamond of our soul, we have to stop second guessing ourselves, and we have to immediately go to our place of power and our temple. That every moment that's been rich in nature, when you've been out there, Scarlet, and doing your pagan empowerments and all, and every time you've had a presence of a guide or an answer to an issue, you've got to immediately see those cylinders of light coming around you, fortify your auric egg. And again, I go back to Glinda the Good Witch, you know, be gone, for you have no power here. When you think back to the Chronicles of Narnia, when you think back to how the dark forces, whether it's Game of Thrones or whatever, when you've got to move more away from violence and taking and grabbing and just walking over people to get where you want to be. I mean, I really believe the sweet spot now is more about, are you a vehicle of light? Do you live that? Do you demonstrate that? Do you tithe? And I'm not talking about just to a church or just to a ceremonial leader. I mean, do you tithe with your energy? How are you daily? Yeah, we're going to slip and slide, but how are you daily summoning magically a better version of yourself? Go demonstrate that in the world. Don't talk about it. Don't just teach it. Don't just orate it and broadcast it. Go be it. And don't need to have the applause. That's what the shift is now.
Yeah, I really love that message. It's a really inspiring way to look as we are thinking about the future and our roles within this changing world. So that's a great, I think, point to end our wonderful discussion on. And Mary, for our listeners, where could they get in touch with you if they wanted an astrology reading? I think you have a website, is that correct?
Yes, ma'am. It's Mary Ducina. I think of do and see, but it's not the letter C. It's Mary, D-U-S, as in sweet spot, D-U-S-I-N-A.com.
Wonderful. Well, yeah, that sounds great. So for our listeners, definitely check Mary out. She has so many years of experience. So she's a great teacher for us all. So thank you again so much for speaking with us today. I really enjoyed this conversation.
Thank you. And thank you for also acknowledging Joe and the work that he's doing with Lighting the Void. He's wanting to bring a voice to a lot of great people with some wonderful skill sets. And so I just want to also applaud Joe and his vision with the Fringe FM and Lighting the Void. And I'm happy to answer your questions and the audience questions when I appear with him once a month over on Lighting the Void too. I think the next new moon gets knocking at the door around June 3rd. So that'll be the next time that people can actually call in. As Joe says, callers get first ups, you know, the call in or the text in questions, and just see what the Oracle has to say. And in the first hour, you know, like you guys like to do in your show, we talk about how the stars are dancing and what the themes are for that month. So next month is Gemini.
Yeah, that's exciting. Well, thanks again, Mary. And again, for our listeners, check Mary out on her website. And once a month around the new moon on Joe Roop's show, Lighting the Void. Well, thanks a lot, Mary. And we will talk to you later.
Thank you. Light and blessings to you both, and blessings upon your wisdom work.
Thanks. You as well. Alrighty, folks, well, we made it to the end of today's episode. Thanks for sticking around and listening to the entire interview with Mary Ducina. I'm recording this outro today, post Game of Thrones finale, and I will admit, I had a Queen of Cups moment when I got really choked up at the end. It wasn't a perfect ending, it wasn't a perfect final season, but
damn, that show hits me right in the feels. And I won't give away any spoilers, but for all the shit talking I did, that very last scene was very Queen of Cups for me. Maybe I'm the Queen of Cups this week. Crying like a baby. Not fully crying, but, you know, I felt emotion. I felt something tonight. So anyways, guys, don't forget to follow our Instagram at cosmic_keys_podcast. Follow us on Twitter at cosmickeys777. And, you know, thanks for sticking with us, because I know some of you listened just to hear Scarlett, but she will be back next week with more great forecasts, interviews, and discussions on all things spirituality, all things paranormal, all things occult. So we will see you next week, and take care until then.